Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
Now, as an empath, to improve your relationships and increase your energy level, I suggest you take an inventory of people in your life who give you energy and those who drain you. You can do a work inventory, a home inventory, a friend inventory, or peripheral people inventory. Then you can decide on strategies to use. Some vampires you might just want to eliminate from your life, but for those who you can't eliminate, or in situations like families where you're stuck with them, decide on what strategies you want to use and implement them. Try to spend time with loving, nurturing people and learn to set limits with those who drain you. This will definitely enhance the quality of your life. As you're practicing the strategies to deal with energy vampires and protect your sensitivity, it's always a good idea to keep doing your emotional healing work as well, to do your shadow work on all issues inside of yourself that need healing. The law is that you attract negative energies that you haven't worked out in yourself. So the more you can heal, say, fear, the less likely you will be to absorb it. The same is true for anger or other difficult emotions. As an empath, I'm always on alert to see where I'm emotionally triggered. I want to deal with my shadow work. I want to deal with my fear, my anger, my resentments, my anxiety, because I am definitely not interested in being bogged down by what isn't healed in myself. So slowly but surely, I am getting freer of negative patterns in myself and absorbing these patterns less in the world. And I've got to tell you, this is truly liberating. So look at energy vampires as your teachers to heal yourself, as your teachers to set boundaries and limits, and teachers to learn to love yourself more. I consider every emotion and every person in our lives as a spiritual teacher to help us grow and grow beyond negativity. No one, of course, would wish for toxic parents or a toxic childhood or a toxic work environment. But if you have them, try to rise above these conditions and become something greater. Now let's go on to talk about empaths in the workplace. Toxic people can be in the workplace and they can be all over. But because we spend so much time at work, it's very critical to get into the most positive work environment possible for empaths so they don't become drained. Relationships can make or break an empath's experience at work. So you can apply the techniques I talked about with regard to energy vampires to work, to dealing with a coworker, a supervisor, or an employee. If you work in an environment with supportive people, it can be very soothing to be an empath. But an environment of emotional vampires can suck the life out of an empath and take a physical and emotional toll. That's why it's really important to cultivate relationships with more positive people at work to buffer the more negative ones. In addition to the relationships at work, it's important for empaths to know the type of job they would enjoy and most excel at. Empaths want to make the most of their sensitivities, their intuition, their thoughtfulness, their quietness, and creativity in a job. There are energy vampires and stress in all jobs, but some jobs are less stimulating and less stressful than others. Ideally, empaths want to avoid chaotic, dysfunctional work environments, but if you have to be in one, use the tools for coping with energy vampires I've discussed. I often get asked what careers are good for empaths and what are ideal working conditions. And here are some of the responses that I give people. Empaths traditionally do better in low-stress jobs, working part or full-time at home, with no office frenzy, no office politics, bright lights, dysfunctional, chaotic office environments, or energy vampires. So if you can get into a job where you can regulate your schedule and have breaks to decompress, that is optimal for an empath. Now, many empaths I've treated prefer to be self-employed to avoid the drain and overwhelm of coworkers, bosses, and chaotic environments. But if you work at home or alone in an office, be very careful not to become isolated or push yourself too hard. Many empaths prefer working from home but risk being isolated and reclusive, so you must balance people time with colleagues and friends, along with alone time. A good balance that some of my empath patients have found is to work part-time from home. This is less stimulating than having to drive in traffic to work and being stuck in an office 8 hours a day. Time management is key for an empath. Now, what are the worst jobs for an empath? Let me give you a few. Sales is number one. Not many empaths are in sales because it takes too much out of them to deal with the public. Another bad job for an empath is a trial attorney or being in the corporate business world. Politics, public relations, where they value extroverts, not quietness or shyness. Another negative job for empaths is teaching daycare with all the chaos of young children or jobs dealing with the public all day long. One empath patient told me being a cashier at Walmart nearly threw me into an anxiety attack. Empaths do not like to deal with the general public. It's just too stressful. Empaths also don't like to be stuck in a stressful office for 8 hours a day with loud people, bright lights, and tension all around. One empath told me, "I'm a seamstress working out of my home. I could never work in an office 40 hours a week. The smells and sounds and lights make me ill." Jobs with a lot of traveling are not ideal for empaths as well. But if you need to travel for work, you should definitely invest in a pair of noise-canceling earbuds. One empath patient who has frequent air travel says that they block out the crying children who are always seated next to me. Also, listening to calm music and practicing some breathing meditations helps as well. In hotel rooms, be sure to meditate to clear the energy of the previous people. Light a white candle and take a bath or shower to wash off the travel stress energy. My experience in hotel rooms has been really stressful, so what my spiritual teacher has advised me to do is meditate, center the energy in the room, light a white candle, take a bath, and shift the energy myself rather than changing rooms, as I've done in the past. So in summary, avoid jobs that have too much time in an office, sales jobs, or working in the public. Now, alternatively, here are the best jobs for empaths. Empaths love being self-employed business owners, writers, editors, artists, and other creative people. There are lots of self-proclaimed empaths in terms of actors such as Claire Danes, Scarlett Johansson, and Jim Carrey. Other jobs that are good for empaths include website designers, internet virtual assistants, an accountant or lawyer with a home office, consultants. Being a veterinarian is good working with animals and animal rescue. Landscape design or gardening, or being a forest ranger and being out in nature with plants is optimal. Or even being an electrician or plumber who can set your own schedule. Solo work such as graphic design works for empaths. Empaths tend to do better on their own time than with many team meetings that are required. But many sensitive people also choose service professions because of their intuition and big hearts and innate desire to be a healer and helper. But to not burn out, empaths need to learn skills to ground and protect themselves. So I'm going to offer some special tips for healthcare professionals and those in service professions. As empaths can gain huge satisfaction working in the healthcare profession, being teachers, hospice workers, nurses, clergy, physicians, anyone who's on the front lines helping others. But to avoid burnout, they must have enough alone time and time to rest to balance the ongoing demands of work. For instance, I advise my empath patients who are therapists and physicians, not to book patients back-to-back, but have at least a 5 to 10 minute break of quiet time and meditation to center themselves so they don't feel burnout. So many of my empath patients are therapists, and they love doing their work. One told me that I absolutely love being in the zone, helping someone intuitively, trusting messages that come through me, and inspiration I know is bigger than myself. So it's important to allow this process of intuition coming through you as a therapist, but you also need to ground and center yourself so that you don't become burnt out. One reader actually wrote me, "Are empaths too sensitive to serve in the healing arts? My desire to serve conflicts with my desire to protect my energy." My answer, of course, is no. Empaths were meant to serve in the healing arts, but you can't just be defenseless. Empaths need to practice the tools in this audio program and apply them to their work situation. In addition, here are some tips to avoid burnout. You need to take regular meditation, quiet time breaks. You need to limit the number of people you see, if possible. And don't skip meals. Eat regular protein to ground yourself. Have a peaceful, serene office and sacred space in it to soothe yourself. Take baths and showers after a long day to wash off stressful energy. And practice regular, deep breathing. Breathing detoxifies negative energy you might have picked up. As healthcare professionals, it's so vital that you have wise time management in terms of planning how many people you see and how many hours you work. And set clear boundaries at work. Say no to energy vampire coworkers. Protect your time and space. And you can practice the shielding visualization that we described earlier in toxic or stressful environments. And then when you're outside of work, and this is key, have plenty of playtime and recreation time so that you can replenish yourself. Don't go home and just be exhausted and sleep. Plan your work environment so you have more mini retreats within the workday in regard to meditation, breathing, quiet time, short walks, and then outside of work, have time to play and don't think about your patients when you're outside of work. Allow yourself to be 100% present in your playtime. In conclusion, I hope I have inspired you in the area of work and relationships to define your needs and set clear boundaries. These are such saviors for empaths. Empaths have nothing to prove in terms of their choice of job. Doesn't matter what kind of job you have as long as you're happy in it. Simply find one that makes you happy and where you can help others in whatever capacity you are drawn to. In difficult jobs, I've always advised my patients over the years, if everything else fails, just be of service. Just be of service to coworkers and of anyone you come into contact with, and that will allow the energy to shift. If you encounter energy vampires, use the strategies I've discussed, and you will come out ahead. I look at even difficult people as spiritual teachers, and in this case, teachers of staying grounded, not being triggered, teachers who are encouraging you to state your needs, and not being people pleasers. These are all great challenges for empaths, but the wonderful gift of being an empath is all the positive, loving relationships that we can have. We want to give and receive love. We want to choose the right people to share our hearts with. We want to revel in love. Have that be your priority and always engage in self-care, more and more self-care, and your empathic heart can keep growing larger and more beautiful every day. Here's an empath affirmation that you could practice. I am going to attract positive relationships and fulfilling work. I am going to say no to draining people and environments that don't support my needs. I am going to love myself and embrace my sensitivities. In this session, we're going to discuss empaths in love, relationships, sex, and then go on to empaths and parenting. I'm really excited to discuss all these topics because empaths deserve love and comfort in intimate relationships, but they often find it elusive. What is going on with this? Let's start with explaining empaths in love. In my practice and workshops, I'm struck by how many sensitive people come to me wanting a long-term love relationship soulmate. Yet despite online dating services, friends who act as matchmakers, and blind dates, they still remain single or keep getting attracted to, quote, unavailable people. Personally, I can really relate to this. I went years longing for a partner, and every now and then I would find one for a few years, but it ultimately wouldn't last. I choose some pretty amazing men from my point of view, but there was always some dreadful fear of intimacy or emotional unavailability to deal with in these men that we couldn't resolve. Why do empaths have such a hard time finding the right intimate partner? The reason isn't simply that there aren't, quote, enough available people out there, or that empaths are neurotic. Personally, and in my psychiatric practice, I found that something more is going on. For myself, I've found that an important missing piece has been discovering that I am a relationship empath. Empaths are sensitive, intuitive, and caring, but they're also shock absorbers with an extremely sensitive nervous system. They experience extremes of pleasure and pain. The amazing part of being so sensitive is that empaths are attuned to their partners, at times even telepathically, and can be exquisitely sensual, responsive lovers. The downside is that empaths are sponges for another person's stress. The closer you get to someone, the more sensitive you are with them. So in romantic relationships, empaths often get overloaded, drained, or feel suffocated by too much togetherness. It's just too much stimulation for an empath. This differs from ordinary empathy, say when you sympathize with your partner's bad day at work. Relationship empaths go further. You actually merge with your partner and feel his or her happiness and anxieties as if they were your own. Thus, romantic relationships, particularly live-in ones, can be challenging. If you're an empath and haven't identified this dynamic of absorbing your partner's stress, you may subconsciously avoid romantic relationships because you're afraid of getting overwhelmed. That's why so many empaths are attracted to unavailable people. This is how it works. A part of you wants a soulmate. Another part is scared of being sapped and losing yourself. The closer you are to someone, the more intense empathy gets. That's why you may choose unavailable people, because they'll never let you get close enough to experience your fears of intimacy. For instance, you have online relationships that never manifest, or choose people who are ambivalent about love and give mixed messages, so you're constantly trying to decode what they say and do. The result is that you stay in the limbo of longing for a connection that you will never have with them. Or a variation of unavailability is that you are attracted to what I call new relationship addicts. Or you are one yourself. This is when you enjoy the high from the honeymoon phase of a relationship, but leave when intimacy sets in because it feels too overwhelming and complex. Another related topic for empaths is the avoidance of marriage altogether or long-term commitment. Although I've had live-in relationships, I still haven't been married yet. Why haven't I gotten married? I've thought about this a lot. On a deep level, as an empath, I'm afraid of getting trapped in the wrong relationship without an escape hatch. The fear is that I give up too much of myself and my needs get squashed. If this happened, it would feel like a kind of death to me. I look back at my old journals, even from 1988, and at that point, I was bemoaning way back then why I couldn't find a relationship, let alone one that could respect my great need for solitude at times. So what I've learned is that being an empath requires ongoing creative, honest conversations with your mate. that's what's made my current relationship successful for the last few years, because I'm more open to speaking my needs and he's open to listening. To feel safe enough to let go in a relationship and not bolt or sabotage it, it's crucial for empaths to learn how to set healthy boundaries and assert their needs and have ongoing clear communication with the partner who listens to your needs and tries to adapt to them. Then intimacy becomes possible. To determine if you are a relationship empath, take the following self-assessment. Ask yourself, do I absorb my partner's stress, symptoms, and emotions? Am I afraid of being suffocated or losing my identity in close relationships? Do I get drained by too much togetherness and need to be alone to replenish myself? Do I sometimes prefer sleeping by myself? Am I annoyed by the sound of my partner watching television or talking on the phone at home? Are my feelings easily hurt? Do arguments make me ill or exhausted? Do I have a hard time setting boundaries and asserting my needs? When my partner and I travel, do I prefer getting adjoining rooms? Okay, here's how to interpret this self-assessment. 1 to 2 yeses indicate that you have some tendencies to be a relationship empath. 3 to 6 yeses indicate moderate empathic tendencies. But 7 or more yeses indicate that you have a strong tendency to be a relationship empath and need to learn skills to manage your sensitivities to have a successful relationship. So the first step is to take the self-assessment and recognize if you are a relationship empath. Then you can remove any obstacle to finding a healthy partnership where you're comfortable. Where do you start? You've got to be brave enough to reinvent what it means to be in a couple and let go of old, outdated stereotypes of what a marriage or romantic partnership, live in or not, look like. So here are 2 important guidelines to consider. I share these with all my patients. The first is you need to choose a partner who's energetically compatible with you. And how do you do that? Notice how you relate to someone's energy. Ask yourself, does the person's words match their energy? Or is something off? Is my intuition telling me something? If you have any doubts if the person is for real, go slow. Do not give your heart to someone until they prove themselves worthy of your love. To avoid unhealthy relationships, keep intuitively tuning into the person to find out who they really are. Empaths can feel a soul connection with someone more with energy than words. What types of partners are the best choices for empaths? Well, it depends on your temperament. You have to find your own comfort zone that works best for you. I personally prefer a partner who is a rock and a non-empath. He is grounded and he is able to hear my emotions without getting swept away by them. Being with another empath would feel too overwhelming for me. I also prefer a partner who is quiet and contained rather than being a gusher who talks a lot and shares their emotional state frequently. But you might ask, and I get asked this a lot, can 2 empaths have a good relationship together? Yes, definitely, because they more understand each other and they don't have to explain themselves so much. However, for this relationship to succeed, they need to really do a lot of talking about their mutual needs to stay in harmony. 2 empaths on overwhelm at the same time gets pretty intense and requires a lot of understanding on both parts. Now, the second guideline is to choose a partner who respects your sensitivity. Make sure to screen the people you date for their sensitivity IQ. What is someone's sensitivity IQ? You can ask yourself these questions with potential mates. 1, do they honor your sensitivities? As you're getting to know someone, I always suggest that you share that you're sensitive, that you value having alone time. The right person will understand. The wrong person will criticize you for being overly sensitive, which is a sign that this person might not be right for you. You also ask yourself, do they treat you lovingly and with respect? Do they care about other people and have close friends? Do they treat the parking lot attendant or waiter well? Are love and friendship a priority in their lives? Do they respond well when you set limits and boundaries with them? Are they kind to children and animals? Do they appreciate nature? Do they honor the earth and actively try to preserve it? Are they giving and unselfish most of the time? And most important, are they capable of love? If you get approximately 7 to 10 yeses to these questions, your mate has a high sensitivity IQ, and this is good. 3 to 7 is a moderately high IQ, and anything less than that is a low IQ. This person has a questionable ability to be a sensitive partner unless they go into coaching or therapy to grow. And 0 yeses, I would go in the exact opposite direction and find a more sensitive partner. So if you ask yourself these questions and assess a potential partner's sensitivity IQ, you're off to a good start. However, not all empaths want to be in long-term soulmate relationships, and I want to stress that that's perfectly okay. It's not everyone's path to be in a relationship, and growth can come in so many other ways, which is also wonderful. Sometimes empaths just need a break from relationships to be with themselves and grow and heal. That's okay, too. One empath patient told me, "I've been happily single for 3 years. I tend to put others first and ignore my own needs when I'm in a relationship, so I become unhappy eventually. I feel more empowered when I'm single. Relationships can be disempowering for me. But I want to get to a point where I can be empowered in a relationship." So let's say you do want to be in a relationship. Let's talk about how to have empowered, intimate partnerships for empaths. One survey showed that sensitives are more likely than controls to be single, divorced, or separated, and less likely to have ever been married. One interpretation is that empaths and sensitives tend to have special needs that make marriage more complex and difficult for them both and their partners. However, empaths can be in successful long-term relationships when the communication is open and loving with a mate. For those of you who are interested in having a relationship and want to feel empowered as an empath with a partner, it's important to have creative conversations with him or her about your needs. Enduring long-term relationships are possible for empaths if there's ongoing discussion. Empaths also thrive on consistency, which fosters trust and acceptance. One empath patient told me, "My husband accepts me exactly as I am. Through his acceptance, I have learned to be true to myself." If you're embarking on a relationship or have been in a long-term relationship, here are some points to discuss with your beloved about loving an empath. There are some common challenges and adjustments needed in successful relationships. How do you love an empath? Here are the challenges and adjustments. Number 1, the importance of having regular alone time to decompress and meditate. Take what I call a golden hour to decompress. What this is getting in the habit of taking mini breaks throughout the day. Tell your partner how vital it is for you to do this and that empaths need to think and process alone to regroup. Your partner needs to understand this about you. It is central to being an empath. Or sometimes you can have quiet time together. Sometimes you don't want to be alone. You want to just be left alone. Your mate needs to understand that. Explain this to your mate so they don't feel that they've done something wrong and that you're not pushing them away. You don't want them to take this personally. You have to make this about you and your own sensitivities. When I was on a book tour and I was all talked out from being with people all day, My partner would call me in my hotel room, and we'd just be silent with each other on the phone so we could connect in silence. It was so wonderful to do this with someone, to not have to talk to them, and yet feel each other's presence. It felt so loving and so good. It's important to balance alone time with people time. Another empath told me, "I love people, but the loss of freedom and quiet alone time is scary. It's like not being able to breathe. However, too much free time leaves me feeling disconnected. So there's a balance between alone time and people time." Empaths have issues to work out in relationships, no matter how good the relationship it is. My partner and I adore each other, and there are still empath issues to work out. I have a very strong hermit side inside of me, so we are finding our way, and he is being incredible. When you commit to a marriage, the very nature of the relationship calls for sacrifice and compromise, but you don't want to compromise your soul, so you have to reach a balance in this. The second point is to negotiate with your partner about the amount of time you spend socializing versus the amount of time you spend alone. It's important to make compromises with a non-empath mate. Here's what I did when I was on vacation with my partner in the Bahamas. We were at a B&B where everyone ate dinner together every night. He liked that and felt that it was a good way to get to know interesting people. Whereas talking this much with anybody would drive me crazy. I am not into small talk or getting to know all those people. So he and I talked about it, and he told me that I could eat alone in my room as much as I wanted, which I normally would have done, but I didn't want to miss out on being with him. So the compromise we made was that we ate dinner together on the dock alone, and he spent other time getting to know everyone. So this compromise worked. But I just want to make the point that normally, if I was on my own, I would be eating dinner alone every night just to avoid all the people. That's what I would be comfortable with. But because I wanted to be with him, we made this other compromise. And this is something similar you can do in your relationship. An empath patient in a similar situation told me that she was engaged to a person who enjoys talking to strangers, so he likes sitting at the big social tables. She did not, and she felt drained. A couple of nights when he was ill and stayed in his room, she dined alone, and she said she loved it. Many people asked her if she wanted to dine with them. She said, "I guess they felt sorry for me, but I would politely decline. I love my own company. Very few people can understand that, but now my partner does." So these are some basic differences between non-empaths and empaths in terms of socializing. Non-empaths often like to socialize, and empaths have a much more limited capacity and really truly enjoy being with themselves in situations where others would prefer being social. The third point to discuss with your mate are physical space adjustments. You have to talk about your physical space requirements because breathing room is essential. Decide what kind of space requirements you need and negotiate them. Definitely have a space in your home where you can be alone and explore with creative living conditions. Ask yourself, what space arrangement works best for me in a relationship? Is it having a private area to retreat to? Separate bathrooms, which is a must for me. It's very hard for me to share a bathroom with anyone. Separate wings? Separate apartments or houses? Whatever you decide on, it's fine, but agree not to crowd each other. When traveling together, you may prefer getting adjoining rooms, as I do, with your own bathroom. This worked wonders for me. If sharing a room is the only option, hanging a sheet as a room divider will help. No hovering. In a past relationship, a boyfriend got me a keep out sign for my room as a present, which was perfect for me. The fourth point, sleep adjustments. Give yourself permission to sleep in separate beds or separate rooms. In conventional relationships, partners sleep in the same bed. However, some empaths never get used to this, no matter how caring their partner is. They just like sleeping in their own space, or else having a giant bed like a California king, or two twins put together so they can stretch out on their own side of the bed without touching their partner. Empaths need to have space. This is in bed and in their homes. One empath had to talk to her partner about loosening the, quote, snuggle hold during sleep, as she needed not to be held so close all night. A non-empath would love to cuddle all night, but empaths don't always like that. Also, empaths tend to be light sleepers and need more sleep than their partners. They get easily disturbed by their partner snoring or thrashing around. Empaths also love to dream and get disturbed when their dream cycle is interrupted. So you've got to discuss options with your partner. Give yourself permission to sleep separately or sleep together a few nights a week. Because non-empaths can feel lonely sleeping alone, make compromises when possible. For years, I couldn't sleep with a partner because of snoring, thrashing around, or not having enough room in bed, and I'm a light sleeper. My current partner asked me if he could help me get used to sleeping with him through desensitizing me. So I thought, okay, maybe I should try this. And so what he did, and it actually worked, is that at first he slept way over on the other side of a California king and agreed to go in another room if this didn't work for me. He said, if it's uncomfortable, just put out my finger and touch him and he would leave. If I wanted more contact, I should tell him and he would move closer. Granted, he is a quiet sleeper most of the time, but I did get used to sleeping with him comfortably over time. Still, if it gets too close, I want more space and I ask him to move over, and he does. In addition, some empaths like staying up late because it's the only way they can really be alone when their mate and kids are asleep. So you can tell your partner this so he or she can understand. The fifth point in adjustment with being an empath and loving an empath has to do with expressing emotions. It's important with an empath to bring up only one issue at a time. Empaths have many emotions, issues going on at once. The best way to express this to your partner is one issue at a time as well. My partner gets totally overwhelmed, like his brain is being squeezed if I bring up too many issues at once. Men, non-empath especially, tend to be task-oriented, and they like to be helpful with one issue at a time. Too many requests for change makes it all seem impossible. For instance, if you say to your mate, I'm so upset about how my boss treated me, I would appreciate it if you could turn down the TV. I need you to help me take in the groceries. I need you to listen to me express my emotions. All that is way too much for a partner to assimilate. Also, in the case that you and your partner have an argument or conflict, afterwards, it's essential for empaths to take a reset time away from your partner to process things and center yourself. Empaths need space and time after arguments. Point number six, don't take things personally, even when they are personal. This is a great tenet of the spiritual path that is demanding, but it is very basic to good communication and relationship harmony. Try to be less reactive to comments and more centered so you aren't triggered as much. Then point number seven, this is a technique I recommend to patients and use myself. It's called the sandwich technique when communicating. What this is when you communicate something that you'd like your partner to change, or when you're expressing a conflict, put your request sandwiched between two positive statements. This is how it works. Tell him how crazy you are about him and how attracted you are. Then put in your request. You can talk to him about how you need alone time and how it's a way that you replenish yourself so you will even be more present with him later. Then hug him and ask him for his help in taking care of you in this way. This is an example of the sandwich technique. Remember to use it when you're presenting a difficult issue to your partner. Point number eight, the no yelling rule. As I discussed previously, empaths get overwhelmed around yelling and loud voices. This is just something that their partners must accept about them. I'm totally strict about this rule in my house for self-preservation. One empath told me I cannot stand arguing around me. I actually feel the vibration of anger in my own body. It feels like I'm being physically hit. If I end up in a yelling match, I end up feeling drained for a few days. Also, children often feel like they're the cause of your arguments if you argue around them, so avoid that at all costs. The ninth point is to practice loving detachment. Empaths get drained trying to fix other people's problems and when they can't set boundaries. When a man is upset, don't try to fix it or offer suggestions. When I first started getting involved with my partner, he told me one thing he really disliked was getting instructions. When he's going through a difficult time, he has trained me to say, "I have faith that you can handle it," rather than offering a bunch of suggestions that he didn't ask for. What this technique does is that it keeps you out of the results and respecting the fact that your partner can handle something. This stops you from absorbing his or her stress and energy. So try not to interfere in your partner's life too much. It's a gift to let other people be themselves. Let them face their own difficulties. The next point in terms of loving an empath are sound requirements. Empaths can't tolerate a TV or radio on constantly. You have to ask your mate to get a headset and understand your needs to have peace and quiet in your home. Don't bring your computer into bed. There are light and sound intrusions and unhealthy electromagnetic radiation that will upset an empath mate. Empaths are usually very quiet people. Their partners need to understand this about them and be very sensitive about the kinds of sounds they have in the home. Point number 11, bath and water adjustments. Empaths love being in water, so they tend to take long baths and showers. My partner keeps pointing out how long I spend in the bathtub. I could spend an hour in the bathtub every night because I actually go into trance in the bathtub and feel intuitively tuned in the water. And I am lucky enough to have a window in my bathroom so I could see the moonlight filtering in the water. And this puts me in trance, which is ever so replenishing for me. However, he wants me to go to bed with him. So what do you do in that case? I have learned to compromise with him. There's some nights when I take longer baths and some nights when I take shorter baths because he loves for me to be in bed with him when we go to sleep. So compromise is the key when you're living with a non-empath mate and listening to their needs as well, because the last thing you want is your mate putting pressure on you. Other points to consider are smells and chemical sensitivities. An empath has an incredible sense of smell, so he or she has to express their preferences for smells. For instance, no aftershave or perfume or synthetic body oils. Essential oils may be fine, but synthetic oils may be toxic to empaths. And finally, empaths need a lot of play. They need playtime so their partners can encourage this. Empaths need playtime with their partners, and so it's important for both to play together. Empaths tend to be on the serious side, but love to play, so our partners can help bring out this aspect of ourselves. To get in touch with your deepest needs in a relationship, I suggest you do the following meditation on your own. The point of the meditation is to treasure your relationship needs as an empath. In a quiet setting, take a few long, deep breaths to center yourself, to feel your core, to feel your heart. Turn off your phone, turn off your computer, close the door. Make sure you won't be interrupted so you can have open inner space to explore. Breathe, center yourself, quiet your mind. Let any negative or stressful thoughts or your to-do list float by like clouds in the sky. And then just feel the comfort in your own body and the joy of having this time to tune into yourself and listen to your deepest needs as an empath. Then inwardly ask yourself, what do I need in a relationship that I've been afraid to ask? What sensitivities in myself would I like my partner to honor? What most of all would make me feel comfortable in an intimate partnership? Pose these questions inwardly and then intuitively tune into this rather than thinking it out. Begin to listen to your body and your body's signals. Let any aha feeling and intuitive insights flow. See what pops up. What do you need most of all in a relationship? What needs would you love to be met that you've been afraid to ask your partner? Most important, do not censor yourself. For instance, would you love more time to yourself? Would you love to go out and walk in the forest or dance under the full moon? Would you like to go barefoot and feel the earth's energy under your feet with your partner or alone? Would you like to have more playtime in the relationship? Would you like to have more communication? Whatever resonates for you is fine. Just let your mind flow and tune into your intuition. And do not censor your deepest needs. I don't care what they are. Let them come out and surface and be free and be known. You want to uncover the truth of your needs so that you can be clear about them. There is no reason to be ashamed or to hold back. Begin to accept and treasure your needs as an empath. They are an intimate part of who you are, and they could make your love grow deeper with a partner and enhance your communication. In this quiet state of self-acceptance and meditation, tell yourself, my needs are beautiful and deserve to be expressed. I deserve to feel comfortable in my relationship. I deserve to have fun in my relationship and not hold back on fun. I deserve to have open communication with my partner, and I deserve to be heard. Then send yourself love and acceptance from your heart, a positive energy that permeates your entire being. Send that love to all your needs and sensitivities and all aspects of your empath self. Feel total love and self-acceptance for all your sensitivities, for all your quirks, for all your needs, everything, all of you. Treasure them. Let that feeling of treasuring yourself, of self-love, nurture and inspire you to be the most authentic you that you can be in a relationship. And then just sit quietly for a few moments, immersed in all that good feeling and all that positive self-acceptance. letting yourself savor the positive energy and remembering for later on the needs that you need to discuss with your partner that you've always been afraid to ask. Following this meditation, I suggest you write down in a journal all the needs that became clear. Do not censor them, then slowly but surely begin to discuss them with your partner so you can have clearer communication and that he/she can know and honor you as an empath. I want to emphasize I'm a big believer in working on relationships, on being your authentic self, and resolving issues as best you can. But in some cases, as much as you might try, as good as your intentions may be, some relationships are not meant to be for the long term. Sometimes a relationship may last a year, 5 years, 10 years, or even months. In all these cases, relationships are teachers to help you open your heart and heal wounded areas in yourself. They all can be learned from, whether they are short or longer term, difficult or smoother. In the case that a relationship does end, it's important to have closure. In the best of cases, you and your ex have good discussions about the ending and you both move on in your lives. Sometimes, though, I get asked by empaths, but what happens if I break up and I keep thinking about the person? I still feel their energy around me. What can I do? I want to move on, but I feel a bit blocked. If you are feeling that you need some help with closure, a great tool to use is cutting energetic bonds with the person. In a meditation, in quiet time, when you are calm, envision seeing the light bonds between you and the other person. Say thank you inwardly for these bonds and everything you've learned from them, but then say, emphatically, it's time to break these bonds now. Be clear, be definite. Then visualize taking a scissors and cutting each cord completely, watching them fall away as each person goes in opposite directions, free and clear of any energetic bonds between one another. A shaman once gave me another technique for honorable closure to cut the cords of a painful breakup I was going through. The man had left me and I was in a lot of pain. I wanted to let go, but every night I would dream about him, which I didn't want. What the shaman suggested to me was to go out in nature and find a very big stick. Look at the stick and say, this relationship is totally over. Then break the stick in half in 2 pieces, place them on the ground, then walk away and never look back. It's very important that you don't look back. This finalizes the ceremony of closure.
Still, the glow.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.